No Friend But the Mountains is a book that has just been released after years of careful work within a high security, highly dangerous world of Manus Island Detention Centre. Its author, Baruz Pachani, is still imprisoned there, so it's not too easy to interview him. So we've invited Alex Riley to come and talk about the book. Alex is a professor at the Adelaide Law School and an expert in migration and refugee law. He's also just finished a online review of No Friend But the Mountains for The Conversation. Alex, welcome to Packed Lunch.
Hi, Peter.
Could you maybe start by talking about who is Baruz Pachani?
Yeah, I didn't know much about Baruz Pachani, although he's been very active as a commentator on what's happening on Manus Island. Before coming to Manus Island, he was a journalist. He's Iranian. He grew up in Kurdistan, though, in a very war-torn area on the edge of the sort of border of Iran and Iraq and that sort of region. He ended up having to flee Iran and, like so many other people, ended up on a boat and ended up on Manus Island. The thing that's extraordinary about Baruz Pachani is he has continued to with his journalism while he's been on Manus Island.
Yeah, let's talk about that in just a minute. But before we get to him and his book, it is notoriously difficult to get good information about what's happening on Manus or Nauru. Could you say something about the legal architecture or the legal structures that are in place that really stop us getting information or people even visiting to check out the islands?
Sure. One of the big problems for getting information is that the whole asylum seeker policy in Australia is wrapped up as a security issue. Yeah. So the government itself doesn't give information. In fact, it uses the idea of operational security as a reason not to share information. So when boats were intercepted and people were taken from boats, the government didn't feel that it had any obligation to reveal to the Australian people what was happening in pursuing that policy. So that meant people went to Christmas Island, they'd end up getting flown to Nauru and Manus Island. Now, of course, they're separate countries, they're not part of Australia. So where governments aren't sharing information, we then rely on civil society organisations, we rely on journalism, we rely on NGOs to go in. Amnesty International is obviously one that has a big role. But these organisations find it very hard to get to Nauru and Manus Island. And that's partly because it's incredibly expensive. So people just, journalists can't just go, oh, well, I'll drop over to Nauru and see how things are going. It's going to cost me thousands of dollars. But then they face the barrier that certainly in Nauru and in Papua New Guinea as well, there are visa restrictions. So if you go over as a journalist, you might not be allowed to visit the centre or comment on the policy at all. And that's partly because Nauru and Papua New Guinea have particular relationships with Australia. They rely on the money that Australia has given for running the detention centres, and therefore they are very careful not to create waves.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're talking about these conditions where the flow of information is very difficult, and Baruz is there as a detainee. So how did he write this book?
Yeah, it's an incredible story. He wrote the book on smuggled mobile phones. So he...
Phones, more than one, several.
Yeah, because every now and then he'd get discovered and the mobile phone would be taken and then they'd have a smuggle in another one. And he did it by text message to... He had contacts in Australia and part of the story, which is revealed largely through the introduction to the book by the translator, he talks about how a number of people in Australia have reached out and tried to make contact with Baruz Pachani, and through those contacts he's been able to access universities and get his work distributed.
Yeah.
But the translator of the book, he was involved in very closely with Baruz Pachani, so they talked to each other. So Baruz would send through just via text message. The translator would then translate it into English because it was in Farsi.
Of course, yeah.
And they would collaborate together on slowly creating a book out of this, which to me was so remarkable because the book read very, very beautifully. The narrative is very clear, and it's hard to imagine that it was written in little chunks on a mobile phone.
Yeah, well, he may not have had access to previous chapters he had written.
Yeah. Yeah, so it really was a narrative that he had to write just ongoing. Yeah. Now, I'm not sure whether at the end of it he managed to then get a whole manuscript to go back and review it. Correct. I suspect that was possible, so that would help the narrative.
Yeah. Well, it's been described variously as horror surrealism was one description, part of the genre of prison literature.
Mm.
How did you find it? What was your experience?
My experience was it was a real testament to what's happening on Manus. So you mentioned before that we don't have much information, and this is an incredible insider's account. It's something that you just cannot get by observing Manus over a couple of hours. So every now and then organisations do get to go in and see what's going on. But this is an account over many years, and you can see the emotions changing from some hope early on to slowly just turning into a survival narrative. How do you survive in a system which is designed to break you?
Yeah.
And I found it was not surrealism, it was realism.
Yeah.
Because this is really happening. Yeah. And it continues to happen to Baruz Bachani. He's still on Manus Island.
I mean, I imagine that there have been a couple scenes or a couple moments from the book that you haven't been able to shake. I mean, because it is, as you say, that real intense realism. Are there maybe just some moments in the book that have stayed with you?
There are lots of moments. He describes particular events, and certainly some of those stick with me, and I put them in my review, like when you're not allowed to have games, yeah, apparently, in the detention centre, and so someone set up a game of backgammon using bottle lids, and the guards threw that over and destroyed the game, and you can't play game of backgammon.
Yeah.
But even simpler things, like they have bottled water to drink, that's all they've got. But the bottled water is really warm and tepid because it's so hot and there's no fridges. And so he describes drinking this water and it never quenching your thirst.
Mm.
And that idea just is amazing. It's you can't capture that except by experiencing it like he has.
In your review, this is a quote from your review, "Australians accept detention on Nauru and Manus as a necessary evil to prevent the uncontrollable flow of asylum seekers to Australia by boat." What do we know about how the Australian public views detention in Manus and Nauru, about public attitudes?
One of the things about the asylum seeker question is it divides the public,
sure,
in really quite clear ways.
Yeah.
So we know that there are those who completely buy the narrative, and the government has been incredibly clever at sticking to this narrative without deviating from 2013. In fact, Labor started it.
Labor started it.
The Liberals and Coalition has continued it.
Yeah.
But there's the division in the Liberal Party, because there are those who think it's just too tough. Within the community, it's hard to know.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have great figures, but we do know that people feel uncomfortable. We do know that for John Howard, for example, in the early 2000s, it was a really strong vote winner.
Yeah.
But then as the stories about how tough it was and whether it was necessary and people started to question that, it became a vote loser. And Labor actually campaigned very hard in 2007, Kevin Rudd, on that we need to be less tough on asylum seekers. And then they brought in a compassionate policy. Now, sadly, I think Labor is spooked from what happened during their years in government, where,
sure,
the number of,
yeah,
people arriving by boat did increase dramatically, and the Coalition has now it's added to their narrative that if you let Labor in charge,
yeah,
boats are coming back and,
yeah,
and in possible numbers. Now, I don't think that's true. There are all sorts of things you can do in policy to avoid that. But how do we cut through? I think the way to cut through this now is the narrative, narratives like Baruz Bachani. It's those stories, because it's a very powerful narrative to say, oh, look, it's really bad that we have to do this, but we do. But if you can bring home the human story,
yeah,
then
personalize it.
People are affected by that.
It feels to me, reading your review, it's an excellent review, and we're encouraged to bear witness to this suffering through the book. Perhaps it's also a call to action as well. But do you have any thoughts or feelings about what it would actually take to fundamentally change that, what is quite a cruel policy and system?
I think it comes down to individuals. It comes down to people writing to their politicians and to saying, look, we don't think this is necessary.
Yeah.
The political space is, it's easy for them to hold that narrative of being tough and the necessary evil idea. And I guess I think strategically the first group that might move is Labor. They traditionally have been more sympathetic to the asylum seeker issue, and therefore maybe it's pressing them. And if, as the polls suggest, there's a very good chance that Labor could get in, maybe they'll be a little bit more courageous than they might otherwise have been. So I think it's putting pressure on them.